Today on the show, Steve and I discuss the top 10 books of all time. Enjoy. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Steve, I've got a great poem for us today.
Yeah, is there time for it? I mean, this subject is going to take us 2 hours anyway.
Yeah, it's going to take a while, but this one's worth it.
All right.
Because I feel like I've read this on the show before. Perhaps I have, perhaps I haven't. But it is by Edna St. Vincent Millay, who did write a poem that I have read previously called First Fig.
Right.
That is a wonderful, but this one is fantastic. It is entitled, Euclid Alone Has Looked on Beauty Bare. And
I don't like it already.
Great, thank you. I appreciate that. Strike it from the record.
Euclid is math. What are we?
Well, if we're going to talk about the top 10 books of all time, Euclid's Collected Proofs definitely has to be on the list.
We can argue about that. Read your freaking poem.
All right. All right. Euclid Alone Has Looked on Beauty Bare by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Euclid alone has looked on beauty bare. Let all who prate of beauty hold their peace and lay them prone upon the earth and cease to ponder on themselves. The while they stare at nothing, intricately drawn nowhere in shapes of shifting lineage, let geese gabble and hiss, but heroes seek release from dusty bondage into luminous air. O blinding hour! O holy, terrible day, when first the shaft into his vision shone of light anatomized, Euclid alone has looked on beauty bare. Fortunate they who, though once only and then but far away, have heard her massive sandal set on stone.
Not bad for a mathematician.
Right? I mean, you don't have to love it, but I think St. Vincent Millay's work is, that one in particular, is exemplary. I mean, it's just, it's amazing in terms of helping us take a look at something that is well-worn, right? Obviously, when it comes to poetry, beauty is one of the subjects that poetry is infatuated with. And so when Miss Millay comes along and says, you know, it's really Euclid. He's the only one. None of the poets, just Euclid, who has really seen beauty. I can appreciate someone who takes that tack.
For our subject,
right,
which is a question, yeah, or a challenge, I would call it,
yeah,
posed upon us once again by our dear friend Josie Parker,
yes,
using the venue of Facebook to pose a question in a somewhat cowardly fashion. She was not willing to do it face to face. The top 10 books of all time. Despite the clarity and preciseness with which Euclid spoke,
yes,
your poet then takes it into this realm of perspective or taste or, you know, beauty.
Yep.
I hesitate to say is in the eye of the beholder. Ooh. But when it comes to the top 10 books of all time, it's an argument that's gone along for a long time.
Right.
Every reader you speak to has a different list.
Yep.
Although I would say we could probably move towards a list that's somewhat agreed upon, at least between you and I.
Yeah, sure.
But it's this whole problem of criteria that pose a problem to me. Do But do you mean the top 10 most enjoyable books? Do you mean the top 10 most useful books? Mm-hmm. Do you mean the top 10
most challenging?
Read?
Right.
You know, the top 10 bestsellers of all time or whatnot. Right. And the criteria is going to vary with the reader, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
And we do believe in genre.
Yeah.
So do I have to include the best from 10 different genres and thereby derive the top 10 books, each
right.
one representing a different genre, in which case I think there's more than 10 genres.
Right,
so now we're back into trouble again.
Exactly. So now I have to pick the top 10 genres and the best
and the best book each of those.
From each of those. Yeah. So I guess this is full disclosure, Josie, for sure we're not going to answer your question.
That's right.
Right. However, okay, so now
but we'll spend 2 hours
put talking. We put our cards on the table. It ain't happening.
That's right.
Now let's try and do it.
Okay.
All right. First, Bible.
Yes.
Of course. Come on. There's no objection there.
Except that it's a collection of
well,
works.
Yes. But it's all bound together. It's a book.
It is a Bible.
Top 10 books, right?
A Biblia.
Right. That's right.
That's
exactly.
Right.
So,
and it is unified.
It is.
It has an author.
That's right.
So, you know, the collected works of God.
Right, right, yeah. Exactly.
And if we're allowed to do that, then bring on your Play-Doh and your...
Well, I'm thinking, and I'm thinking that while we've only got 10, we might as well go ahead and include the Apocrypha and the Pseudepigrapha just for the
as
material.
The Bible.
Oh, right, yeah, exactly.
Like, right.
Just for it.
Let's not waste three. It's,
right.
That's
exactly.
One.
Exactly, exactly. Like... Anything that you can cram into the pages, like we'll take it, right? We'll sort it out on the other end. Okay.
But I mean, that is part of that criteria, right? If we're going to then speak about those that have moved the most people, the Quran surely would.
Sure.
Other religious writings, but
right.
For us,
right.
As Christians,
yes,
the Bible's got to be there,
or
you're in trouble with your. Priest.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Yeah,
so,
you're going to have to go to confession early.
That's right. That's right. So, and I don't know that we have to justify that one.
I don't think so.
I think that one can just be put in there almost as a...
Carte blanche. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just sort of take it or leave it, right?
By Bible, I read all other things.
Yeah.
So, it's... If what we're doing is talking about the 10 books we'd have to pack for that
right.
unexpected maroon on a desert island,
right?
I would be distraught if my Bible was not with me.
Yes, yes.
But what are those other 9?
Okay, all right. So Euclid's Collected Proofs.
Okay.
Well, I brought up Euclid at the beginning. I feel like I got to give him another plug.
If Euclid's
here.
On the list,
yeah,
then we start to talk about equipment necessary. A whiteboard and
right,
lifetime
yeah.
supply of markers. Because I really don't do Euclid.
Sand.
Without.
Well, wait, dude. Hold on.
You
if
get
you're
the
on,
sand.
If you're on a desert island, you've got all the sand you could ever
so
need.
So are we committing ourselves to this Robinson Crusoe's top 10 books? Are we
going
to go there?
We'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
Well, so seriously, though, think about it this way. If you were going to do, if you were going to take it in the tack of Robinson Crusoe, you're alone on a desert island, that already completely changes where I'm going with it because
yeah, I was gonna
then
say,
it becomes about, I'm
I
taking
don't know if
like
I want
a,
Euclid on the desert island
yeah.
because Euclid is a conversation starter.
Yes.
Euclid's best done with minds working together.
Right.
You're by yourself. You get
yeah.
stuck.
Right.
You're
talking,
mad.
Right. Talking
Euclid's
to Wilson.
Euclid's going out into the drink.
Right. Like Tom Hanks on Castaway.
That's
you're
right.
you're talking to the volleyball. No, I think at that point I want like a special forces survival guide or something, right?
The army field.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to die.
You want Robinson Crusoe?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So, okay. So let's not commit ourselves to that
right.
because it's going to really narrowly, which in fairness, what we need is some super narrow parameters.
Well, so I would approach this list if I don't like being forced to 10.
Yeah, right.
100 makes more sense.
Right. Why not 11? Why not 100? Right.
My library certainly has not been limited to.
Yes.
Top 100. Right. My wife would like it to be, but it's not. But if we're going to say 10, and so I'm going to be very careful and very picky and recognize I'm leaving a lot of stuff out.
Got to.
But I want to take care of all of my reading needs.
Okay.
So, for instance, there's got to be some beauty.
Yeah.
Euclid's not a bad choice.
It's not.
But Shakespeare?
Yeah. Shakespeare is up there. The First Folio, 1623. I could go for The First Folio. Yeah, put it in there. I'll take it.
To me, that is one of those that I, by myself, can find a world of usefulness, whether it's limited to his plays or includes the sonnets,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
I couldn't exhaust that in a lifetime.
Right. Yeah,
it's good stuff.
It really is.
Still would prefer to see it,
yeah,
as opposed to just dry read it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not having it or having it, I want
it. Right. And the question is books.
Yes.
So we'll go with the book.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
picking an anthology feels like cheating, even though it is a book, technically.
Yeah.
And it also, I'm not a giant fan of anthologies anyway.
You're gonna waste some space.
Yeah, exactly.
There's gonna be stuff in that anthology that you don't read.
Yeah.
Or that you try to read and go, eh.
Right. Right.
That's what I hated in college survey. You know, I started out as an English minor and then switched away from that. So I still had to take my English requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Brit Lit, we had the Norton Anthology of British Literature.
Right.
A third to half of which was quite interesting to me.
Right. Sure.
It's a big old tome. If I could have cut it in half, I might say that's worthwhile.
But
the fact that I'd have to carry this big old thing around,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's other uses.
Holding up your car.
That's right. For instance. Well, on the desert island, it's about half of it's kindling. but you know what I'm saying? If I'm trying to be every page counts kind of thing,
right,
then I don't even know if the anthology, I mean, I don't think there's a groaner among the Shakespearean plays,
mm-hmm.
but some would go, do you need all 38 of them, or maybe just Hamlet, or maybe just his sixth best, or something
like that. Right. So, well, but we found a book that has a whole slew of them, right, mm-hmm. in the First Folio. So in his kind of, you know, he dies, all his buddies get together and slap a whole bunch of them in one book. So we'll just take that book.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good one.
You've got to have Frost, I would assume.
I've got to.
Unless it's already committed to memory.
That's a thing, right?
If you've done your job.
You're right.
Who needs books? I've got to memorize.
Right.
That's not me.
No.
I need the.
It is a good endeavor, right? It is a noble goal. I don't know if I would take, outside of the desert island, just in terms of top 10 books of all time. I mean, I love Frost, as literally everyone who listens to this podcast knows.
Really?
Wow. This just in. However, I will cry right now reading Build Soil, but I don't think that Frost's collected works is top 10 all time.
Mm.
You know.
Well, and so to me, part of the conversation is this: the top 10 of what?
Yeah, sure.
If it's the what we perceive to be as the top 10 for all people at all time, and then our listeners would want to read these 10 books.
Yeah.
I don't tend to think that way. I tend to think in terms of the books that are most precious to me.
Yeah.
That have had deep meaning, that have been reread and would get reread.
Mm-hmm. So when you say that, what comes immediately to my mind is The Brothers Karamazov, by Dostoevsky. I can see that. If you want to talk about beauty under tension, right? Working out salvation in fear and trembling.
Well, it's like having a seminar.
Absolutely.
The three brothers.
Yes.
And the father.
Right.
Have this discussion.
Right.
Right. And not limited to them. Right.
Father Zosima. Yeah. Exactly. So they're all right.
You have an author writing the way you and I like to talk.
Yes.
And so who wouldn't want that companion?
Right.
Who wouldn't want to be able to just open up a conversation?
Right.
I'd be hard pressed. I would sort of want Homer. He's been important to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I could tell you which one.
Yeah.
Probably Odyssey, but I can't say that.
Yeah.
So let's say Homer.
Homer.
I feel like...
And we'll just find the book where they're bound together.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, with other practical uses.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's see. Which one do I want to... which one do I want to take? I'm going to take the Iliad. If I have to choose between the Iliad and the Odyssey... Why do I have to? I don't have to. We're just making all of this up as we go, right?
Right.
These distinctions are completely arbitrary. However, if I had to pick one, I would pick the Iliad. And the reason I would pick the Iliad is because I have been thinking about Patroclus for a very long time.
Mm.
And I would really like to figure him out. I don't know if I've talked with you about this before, but there is when Patroclus goes out to fight and he is acting like Achilles, right? He takes Achilles' helmet, takes Achilles' armor, puts it on, picks up Achilles' shield, gets to Achilles' spear, doesn't even touch it, doesn't try, grabs a different one and goes out. And I've spent way too much time thinking about why the heck that is.
Well, you get that scene from David and Saul. Yeah,
right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's a certain amount. Like, I am totally willing, able, and ready to intimate or to falsify myself as Achilles when it comes to all of these things, but when it comes, his armor, his shield, his helmet, but when it comes to his weapon, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
He doesn't even pick it up.
Yep.
He doesn't even touch it. Yeah. Anyway.
That's deep stuff.
Right.
And I get that way, interestingly enough, with Tolkien.
Okay.
One of the things I love about Tolkien is that it's all one story. So if you're asking me about a book,
yeah,
I'm in trouble.
Right. Start at the Silmarillion.
I'm not going to take that with me. There's beautiful moments in that,
right?
But a lot of it is meant to be more of a backstory history,
right?
Than anything.
It's fun if you've already gone through it.
If I'm allowed to share it with others, then it's The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for me,
yeah.
Then I'm calling The Lord of the Rings a work.
Yeah.
It's fine. And not being forced into which of the three volumes. But I tell you, I don't know how many times I've read that. Some of the best times have been reading it to my sons.
Yeah.
Who are fascinated by a fairly in touch with his feelings kind of guy that Steve is.
Yeah, sure.
That I cannot, for the life of me, make it through that final passage of Frodo going off to the Fair Havens without crying.
Yeah.
And I can remember my two oldest and I are reading this, and they're sitting there around the dinner table, and I'm reading, and the tears are coming down my cheeks, and they're like, "Dad's blind."
Right.
I'm like, "No, I'm not." Yeah. But yes, I am.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And it's this cotton picking fictional story.
Yep. Yep.
But it's just so, you know, Tolkien was frustrated by people who acted like he wasn't Christian enough, and I get frustrated for him
mm-hmm.
because I can't think of a better epitomization
mm-hmm.
of the created world than Middle Earth. It's more real than the real world.
Yeah. Right.
And. It's just there when we have arguments about whether it's Frodo or Sam that's the main character of the book, I get frustrated because if you can't see that it's Sam, I can't argue with you. I don't think you have the means to argue with
me. You just need to read the book.
You need to stop. Do it again until you see it.
Right.
But the wealth, the At the heart of it, it's this mythological
mm-hmm.
construction that I believe we need. And Lewis and Tolkien, in particular, are writing off of that notion that by losing the northern myths...
Yeah.
You know, they're both medievalists.
Yeah.
And, you know, me and elves, I'm in full... just because he's got elves in it,
yeah.
Not to mention that he, you know, created a language for them and all that kind of stuff. But Tolkien's definitely, it's going to be compact. It's going to be inside the jacket,
yep.
You know, pocket.
Right.
It's nearby. I have copies at school. I have copies here.
Yeah.
I've made sure that my sons have copies.
Right.
In part so that when I'm at their homes,
right.
It's nearby.
Right. Yeah.
It's just got to be there.
Yeah.
So that's a definite in
okay.
for me.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
And I'm not keeping count, but I think we're about.
Yeah, we're at three, six. Fours, five, six. I don't know. Yeah. The
we'll have to loop around and put our list in the notes or something to prove that we actually did 10.
Yeah.
or edit it down to 10 once we've.
No.
We've come up with these 20 that we're going to mention. I would put in the plea to listeners to dive into book lists.
Yeah.
I find them fascinating.
Yeah.
Probably the first one I ever ran across was at the back end of Mortimer Adler's How to Read a Book.
Right.
And he had this monstrous list that shamed me
mm-hmm.
because I hadn't read much of it. I've read more of it now, but it would still put me to guilt.
Sure,
that
sure.
I should be at. But over the years, I've discovered that, you know, certainly many don't agree. That list basically became the Great Books of the Western World series that he was the editor of. And there's a lot of people that disagree with what is in that, or Harold Bloom's big list that he did.
Sure, Bloom did one, yeah.
And there's been a bunch of other people give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been a fascinating, long-winded conversation for hundreds of years now. What is that canon? What is that list that students should be expected to read, et cetera? We have that at my school on a regular basis. And, of course, it's renewed lately because people question the legitimacy of ancient literature.
Sure, sure. Yeah, well, and so... I think that's right.
Maybe Adler's book is on the list.
It could be.
How to Read a Book.
There you go.
If you don't know that, what would the other nine be worth?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sorry. I don't know. No, I think that when it comes to a list like this, it is a... One way of approaching this question is a chops question, like a canon,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and I think that's a fine way of approaching it.
But you got to, but if you're doing that,
it's whoever's in the room at that.
But if you're doing that, then it is whoever's in the room, or what connections there are. Are you talking about Western civilization?
Right.
Are you including the East?
Right.
Is Confucius a part of this conversation or, right. or outside it? And again, that's who's in the room. But we haven't mentioned some pretty big dudes still.
Oh, totally.
I'm a strong... my list would have, I don't know which one, but it would have a Dickens novel in it.
Mm.
Great Expectations or David Copperfield, probably.
Yeah.
But others, perhaps.
Great Expectations is so...
It's an amazing work.
So amazing.
And I'm a big Copperfield... I read Copperfield to my sons when they were quite young, and we had a guest at some point for dinner, and they were like, why are you reading your kids this really hard book?
Yeah.
And I asked, I think it was my third.
Yeah.
Who was the youngest of the ones. I don't think the fourth had been born yet, so the third was probably four.
Yeah.
I said, ask him if he finds this difficult. So he turned and he, you know what's going on? There's donkeys in it. He didn't know most of what's going on. But A, just the act of reading. You yes. could have a whole podcast Absolutely. On fathers reading to their children.
Right.
But Dickens is accessible. He's he's long-winded, but his caricatures, his character development is awesome.
Yeah.
And so he'd have to be in there. Dante?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Dante is going to need to... Well, it's going to be hard to exclude Dante, right? Mm. If you do... I mean, I don't know by what metric you're going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about culture forming,
mm-hmm.
Certainly he's up there.
If I'm me raising boys, Beowulf is in the conversation.
Yeah, I think Beowulf is definitely a big one.
And then of course that leads into Arthur.
Yeah, I would honestly be more tempted to include Tennyson's. Tennyson's Tales of Arthur
mm-hmm.
than Beowulf
mm-hmm.
even. I mean, I love Beowulf. Like, okay, whatever. Like, sure. Mm-hmm. I love Beowulf. It's great. But I would be tempted to include... Because another issue that we haven't broached yet is one of translation.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
I like Tennyson, in part, one of the reasons that I like Tennyson over Beowulf is because I can read Tennyson.
Yeah.
I can't read Old English.
Mm-hmm.
I can read a translation. And that's not bad. I'm not here to beat up on people who have to use translations. I have to use translations
right.
for, I don't know, perhaps half the books I teach. However, if I can get the... book per se, right? If I can get the book untranslated,
mm-hmm.
I would like to,
yeah.
right? And so, I don't know.
Well, that's my friends who can approach Homer in
yeah.
Greek,
right.
smile at me because they know I'm getting ripped off.
Right. Well, my...
But I don't feel ripped off until I know Greek and realize how ripped off I was.
Right. My Hebrew professor said that reading the Hebrew scriptures in English is like kissing your wife through a screen door. At the time I didn't have a wife, you know, but I was getting pretty good at Hebrew, and I, by the very end of his instruction, I started to see what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until the very end
mm-hmm.
that I saw it. So on that front, Forcellini is this guy from the 1700s who wrote a Latin dictionary. I would honestly include that. If it was 10 books for me,
mm-hmm.
I would include, it's called like Totius Latinitatis Lexicon. It's a lexicon, not a dictionary. But he goes into defining the words and then additionally showing where those words appear mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. ancient literature.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is particularly fun for me is he's huge on etymology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love Forcellini. Mm-hmm. I go to Forcellini almost every day. Like, yeah, it's just Tuesday, so I'm just looking at Forcellini on some Latin root. Like, really, what does this, you know, what's the metaphor? What's the original metaphor of the word? So
Josie, with her Latin background, is going to hear you say that.
You're right. And probably, she's going to have a better book than Forcellini, probably.
Or maybe accuse you of cheating a little bit, that you've brought this reference work in. But allow me to cheat further.
Okay, great, yeah.
I can one-up you on weird additions to the top 10.
Awesome.
I read it myself and then read it to my sons and have had the unusual and awkward experience of having my one son steal it from me.
Oh, boy.
He claims he doesn't know where it's at. It's on his shelf. I've seen it there. I know where it is. but a dude that gets very little respect, unfortunately, because of how he made his money. He wrote these dime westerns, Louis L'Amour.
Yeah.
In part because I'm from the West and I'm from an area he wrote quite a bit about, and I've had the surreal moment of realizing that a scene he was describing in one of his books was about 3 miles from my house.
Wow.
And knowing it well enough myself to go, I know where that creek is, and I know where that bluff is, and I know where that cave is, and wow.
That's crazy.
But it's not his westerns. He wrote other historical novels, and most people don't realize he owned probably, in his time, the largest personal library ever amassed in the world.
No kidding.
Yes, he was an amazing bibliophile.
Wow.
And he wrote a book that I think was his homage to book lovers.
Okay.
The Walking Drum, which is set right around 1000 AD it ranges across Europe, but in particular Moorish Spain,
yeah.
where the big thinkers, Averroes, Avicenna, etc., were non-Western readers of the West. They were reading Homer, Plato, etc.
Right.
And thinking about it as Muslims,
uh-huh.
right as the Muslim culture was at its arc.
Uh-huh.
And he throws this druid
wow.
into the middle of it.
Whoa.
The storyline itself is stupid.
Okay. Top 10.
The love of books that and you'd only get it if you read it. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody.
Right.
But the joy of reading, the joy of translating, the joy of copying text, because that's what they were doing then. There's no printing presses.
Right.
The books and nooks and
love
of books is there, and it affected me as a young man realizing that there's just so many books and so little time.
Ooh.
Get busy,
right?
And it had the same effect, I think, on at least two of my sons.
Hmm.
The one, at some point, if he's listening to this, stealing it, I know you have it, Josh. it's one of those that I still go back to. I'm going to have to get another copy now. But
right.
It's a very personal choice.
Yeah,
most
sure.
people are going to go...
Right.
But I think that part of that whole conversation...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your criteria is the 10 best-selling books of all time...
Yeah, you just look it up.
Yeah. Right. If it's what 10 do you really want,
mm-hmm.
Walking Drum's in there.
Right.
For me.
Right.
Just like Tolkien probably seems like an odd choice to some people, but it's there for me.
I mean, and I'm not going to one-up you in terms of odd books, but for me, I mean, I have kind of touchstones in the Canterbury Tales.
Hmm.
certainly, because of reasons that I don't need to get into. but it's, yeah, I think that it is an incredibly human and humanizing book.
I kind of feel that way about Quixote, even though I don't know that it would be in my top 10.
Right.
It's hanging around there.
Yeah.
And I've never read it. I'm told that in the Spanish it's
oh yeah
10 times better.
Wow.
But just, again, not as an entire work. There are moments in that book where I'm just taken away.
Right.
And other times where I'm bored.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, and that's... Like my Chaucer professor recently told me, some tales are more equal than others, right? So when it comes to the Canterbury Tales, so yeah, there are moments there where I'm bored too, but I would still include it. Also, I would include Frankenstein.
Well, it'd be hard to leave it out.
Yeah.
But some of that's because I'm a teacher, and I know, I just dig teaching that book to kids.
And, like, I mean, how about when she says that the monster read Paradise Lost and thought it was history?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, stop, let's talk for a month.
Yes.
You know, like, wow.
Just a subtitle. Most of my students miss that. A modern Prometheus.
A modern Prometheus, exactly right.
What does that mean? And I know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But I, again, let's stop and talk for this for a while.
Right.
There is a lot in, especially who we are as moderns.
Mm-hmm.
She captured a transition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before. The transition from learning to live within the boundaries of nature to trying to change nature to fit us.
Yeah.
And it was a nightmare for her,
mm-hmm.
right, that she wrote down, and I think it should be kept that way.
Yeah.
Right? It is nightmarish. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole bunch of other sort of, like, if that's the first science fiction work,
mm-hmm.
I got a whole bunch of others that would be almost in a category. I love to think about what if. And so dystopian literature, the Giver series is a big deal to me.
Sure.
1984, Fahrenheit 451.
Brave New World.
Brave New World, Canticles for Leibowitz, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So I got it. And
dude, have you...
Now it's Lewis, right, with at least that Hideous Strength, if not the whole space trilogy.
Yeah. Have you... there's a book that came out recently... For sure not in the top 10, but what are we even doing anyway at this point? that is called When the Angels Fall.
Uh-uh.
It is a book that is written by, like, a Presbyterian minister, I think. Hmm. I mean, it came out less than 5 years ago.
Hmm.
And it is a meditation on the end of the world. But it's told from, or it occurs within an old order Amish community.
Hmm.
So you inhabit that Amish community, and their interactions with modern society, right? And their moral principles. And how those come to interact with this radically new world where people are making different decisions. Mm. Anyway, just because you mentioned the sort of dystopian genre, it's a pretty quick read, but it's totally worth it. It's really fun.
Cool.
So
we're at Solomon's quandary, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The world's so full of books.
Yeah.
And it's a great question. I'm glad we got to ask it.
Yeah.
I don't know if we got 10 or 20 or where we'll figure that out on the notes section.
Right.
But I, as fun as it is, and as long as we could sit here and chat about cool books we've read.
We could.
I think it's a great, if if what can really save the world is conversation, reading books and talking about them is the easiest way I know to make that conversation happen.
Yeah.
It burdens me that people are afraid to talk about books because it might get, that means they have to read them.
Right.
And not everybody's excited about that. But even if they do read them, they're afraid to talk about them because of the polarized nature of our society.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I find that if in talking about an artifact, a book, is way easier than talking about my opinions, your opinions, directly.
Right.
The two of us looking at another author.
Yes.
Is a much calmer way.
Right.
Than button heads directly.
Right, right.
So I don't get upset with somebody if they read Plato different from me.
Sure.
Only, of course, I don't think through Plato out there directly.
No, we didn't.
But the Republic really ought to be...
The Republic is up there. I mean, it's got to be, right? I would say the Nicomachean Ethics also.
Oh, you got to drag Aristotle in.
I like Aristotle.
He's really hard to read.
Yeah.
It's not that he isn't worth it.
Right.
He really is worth it.
No, he is. And you just remember, hey, listen, guys, the Nicomachean Ethics are lecture notes. Mm-hmm. These were notes that he wrote down so that he could present a fuller case, you know.
Yep.
So it's hard to fill in the details.
Well, I would have to put, we can keep going all night.
But, yeah, sure.
Augustine's Confessions, for me, for comfort. I don't know that I learn a lot from Augustine so much as I identify.
Yeah.
I am he and he is me.
Right.
Especially in the Confessions. And I think this is why we do it with the teenagers in my seminar. You know, he lived a pretty normal teenage life.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sowed his wild oats. And kids respect that. Not in a weird sense, but just in the sense of, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not just some perfect priest who preaches from above.
Right. I can't believe I made it through this whole thing without talking about Kierkegaard. I
hold my breath.
Right.
Now I can breathe.
I think that I need receive a medal of some kind. The last book that I'll throw out that I think is interested in a question like this is East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
Huh.
And, you know, I don't even know that that's my favorite Steinbeck work. There's a lot not to like about Steinbeck. But East of Eden is really, really a wonderful, like you said, Shelley captured a moment in transition. Mm-hmm. I think that Steinbeck too captured this industrialization. Yeah. It's a lament and it's a hope. It's a claiming and a releasing. It's a lot.
The value I see in modern, and I know we're going to get hit on for not having too many moderns, although Tolkien, Lewis, Steinbeck.
Yeah.
We mentioned some S. Tolkien and whatnot. But yeah. I haven't mentioned Wendell Berry, right?
That's true.
But the benefit of a lot of these sort of recent writers is that vignette on that which we are a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain identification, whereas Homer is so other.
Yeah.
Or many of the works that we've talked about, even at this point, Frankenstein is the start of modern life.
Right.
We've come a long way. We think we've come a long way since.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the progressive dream. Is that surely in 300 years we've learned something?
Tune in next time.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying, that there's a certain... There's a necessity of taking a book as a telescope and looking back so far,
yeah,
that all that's left is humanity.
Right.
And not the specifics.
Right.
And there's a different kind of mirror where you and the author are in the mirror together. He's writing about your time,
mm-hmm,
and you're going, oh, this is us.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a different kind of book.
Yes.
So I don't know if East of Eden 300 years from now is around. It may be.
Mm-hmm.
I think Homer's still there.
Homer's there.
I'm not going to talk about other... We don't know from our immediate time what's right. going to make it.
Right.
At best, we can say they're good books.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know that we can claim great for anything...
Permanent.
Past the 19th century.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to.
Sure. Well, we have inklings. We have hopes.
Right.
We're betting on horses. But that is
Tolkien
what it is.
Seems like he's a good horse.
Right. But, exactly.
But we'll see. You know. Right.
We will.
All right. Well, the summary here is that Jason and I love books.
Yes.
So if we ever get around to it, we'll talk about some more specific books. We do have our Have You Read series to
That's
do.
That's right. Yeah, I'm glad you took the chance to plug it. I have been looking forward to rereading Percy's Love in the Ruins. I think we mentioned it long ago on the podcast.
And it's still there.
And it's hanging around. It's just waiting for me to reread it at this point.
Let it be noted, Jason has taken the blame.
Yeah. It is
Steve is ready and raring to go.
Steve is ready now. I am 400 pages behind. And so...
But it just flies along.
It does. It's wonderful. Jesus Christ. All right, I can't start quoting the book. Or we'll never
just get
end
yourself
the show.
Some early times and it'll...
gin fizzes. All right, everybody. We'll talk again.